All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.
Hello everybody, welcome again to All the Rage. And once again this week we are going to be talking about building a more left media. And once again we are joined by a good comrade of the show, Jamie Woodcock. Hello mate, how are you?
Very good. How are you doing?
Not so bad. Right. So last week we discussed quite a few issues. We went to a few different places. Some of it on my part was well disciplined, not much of it because most of my conversations never are. But we come out with a few more kind of points we want to go forward with on this week's show. One of the things that I wrote down during the week, and I know that we've all three of us have discussed this at different points, is why do people like us, however you want to categorize it, working class people, trade unionists, people with that kind of attitude, why do we not take part in media more and more often, in more depth, in more numbers? Jamie, you go first on this one.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting kind of question, but in a sense it's kind of no surprise that people don't take part in media more widely, because it's not, you know, a lot of mainstream media is not friendly to the kind of things that we want to talk about or the kind of ideas that we want to go through. So I think, you know, we can't kind of beat ourselves up for being on an unfriendly terrain, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it does feel, I think, like it is actively against us. I mean, one of the things that a lot of people come back to, not just the obvious politics, not just the shameful way that situations have been dealt with in regards to the Labour Party, Labour issues. When was the last time we saw a positive trade union issue on any news channel? When was the last time you saw such characters in social drama or comedy or anything like that? You know, this is a point that's been brought up by a few people before, and I completely agree. Where are those characters? Where are the kind of positive working class characters? I know some people often, you know, refer to EastEnders, but they're all bloody miserable. You know, that's a terrible program. So I don't care. And they're all untrustworthy backstabbing bastards as well, which is not what I call a particularly good image. So yeah, there's those elements, and there's just basically, I think, a deep level of unfair treatment and also smears.
Yeah, no, I think society has definitely changed. I know John's heard me use this analogy before about society in general. So in the 70s, we had a program called the Rag Trade. It used to pull in about 29 million people on a Saturday. I think it was on a Saturday. And everyone, we used to say the catchphrase, you know, all out, you know, because it was about a unionised workforce. And then we get to the 21st century, and there's a TV programme that's famous for its catchphrase, which is "You're fired." I say it all the time, but we're looking at the 70s, where the Daily Mirror was the best-selling newspaper, and pretty much Labour, you know, a Labour publication. Union membership was at an all-time high. Yes, there was a closed shop, but as I said, the mainstream media now look at that era as the days of the three-day week and the strike action, whereas if we look at the five industrial disputes that created of strike days of all time was 1920, the Labour Party wasn't even formed. 1922, that's the second highest of industrial action, the Labour Party wasn't in power. And the last at the list is fourth lost day, so that's five, is the 70s. And actually, the most highest, the last on the list is the 70s of strike days. And just before that is the 80s with the miners' strike. But between, you know, you'd have to go back a good 50, 60 years to get the most strike days lost, and Labour Party weren't even in power. But for some reason, the mainstream media have got a hold of people and talk about the winter of discontent and so forth and the dark old days and stuff like that, when really what had happened was Callahan and Wilson started to get involved in inflation and stuff like that, and the unions obviously wanted a, and we're enjoying those high wages now actually, which people fail to mention. So it's what the media, who are so powerful, especially the right wing media, the money and the millions and billions, and as I said, until we get out of the grips of that. And it's interesting that the News International made a profit of 62 million, and 54 million of that was to paid out to libel proceedings, and the circulation is the lowest since it's been since 1972. So fingers crossed, lads. And again, we're missing the 80s. I think the 80s on Channel 4, if I remember right, it was really left wing. I mean, Brookside, Afwe the Saint Pet, Boys from Black Stuff. We had a load of comedians, left wing comedians, if I remember rightly, that were pretty much revolutionary. Even the comedy shows, like the Young Ones and that, you know, I know it's funny, you know, Viva La Revolution and so forth. But it was so. I think we've been marginalised, where it's become, we've dressed up, not conservatism. I think some of the centre conservative, you know, it's close to Blair as possible, but it's not as bad as Thatcher, although it is a disease. But we're not really getting. We have to look for media. We have to look for things to talk about. As I said, some wonderful documentaries on Netflix, but you have to look for it. It's not in your face all the time, you know? And it's never going to be aired on mainstream TV. Never, ever. But I do look at those viewerships on those medium, and it is promising. It's growing and growing by the day. And someone mentioned to me about America in the 80s, 70s and 80s. And they said, if you look at America now. So I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, it's not as great as people think. I said, why? And he said, one word, Google. Because people are now seeing what America is. And it actually, when you look at how high it is on, in regards to people, it's the lowest of the list, but it's the highest list, for example, for infant mortality. We wouldn't know that if it weren't for Google. So it's promising, but we're just having to look for it, Jamie. That's the trouble. It's not in our face. We just have to look for it.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what I mean, though, of like, because we don't see, you know, oppositional culture or working class culture in the media, it makes it much harder for people to think about how they can intervene in it. Because if those voices aren't there, then it means there's less space for them. So I guess it's just, you know, I think we have to kind of recognize that most of the media is not friendly to these viewpoints, and see that as a bit of a, like, it's a struggle to get those voices heard. And I guess it's part of the challenge, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, I mean, I suppose part of what we're trying to do with this show, not just this particular episode, but the wider remit is to do exactly that, to challenge media narratives. And I'll come back in a little while to why I think, just a few specifics to why I think that's most important. But I suppose, yeah, we're looking about how we change this, how we specifically organize, which is another issue for another show, actually, is talking about organisation. But what do we do with this? And then, of course, how do we get it into the public sphere in the wider context? Is it a kind of big slow? Do we have to just basically go, well, you know, it's going to be slow, it's going to be word of mouth, it's going to be a bit of a sleeper thing, we're just going to have to do it? Or is there some way where we can look to the world now where there is a lot of very popular left-wing podcasts? There's a lot of
comparatively less popular but still quite big stuff on YouTube. I'm thinking of American stuff like ContraPoints is one thing, and also things like a podcast like the Michael Brooks Show, which also does well on YouTube, lots of video content there. All this kind of stuff. Also, forgive me, Jamie, I forget the name of your mate who does the show about video games and
so it's Marianne.
That's
and
a,
the
yeah,
show
yeah.
is called Left Left Up, which is fantastic. It's really it's worth a watch.
Yeah, we definitely want Marianne on the show, by the way. So if you want, I've sent him a message if you run into her. But anyway, so side issue. Coming back to the main bit. So it's yeah. How do we? I mean, I don't want to put anyone on the spot here about, you know, us three must now answer exactly how we're going to change this. But just, you know, how do we change? I mean, do we have to, what I kind of suspect and sort of fear a little bit because it's such a deep level of work, do we have to really, really plow into just changing societal attitudes and people's ideas? Do we have to change the idea, you know, that working class people have, they're not really good enough to be on in the media? In a real way, other than just as freaks on terrible TV shows. How do we do this, man? What do you think?
Well, I looked at the, I think it's the MP for Leicester, I'm not sure. Young Muslim girl. And they're actually, not on the mainstream media, but the younger channels of social media, they're putting up her statements in the in Parliament, which he just goes for it, and it's refreshing actually. I forgot her name, John.
Is it Zara Sultana?
That's it.
She was on Navarra the other day.
Yeah, she's getting reposted a lot, I've noticed, on the not so normal channels. She's speaking. The normal kid's language, shall we say. And people are getting into that, and I'm hoping with people like her that youngsters can't aspire to say, well, I want to be a politician. It's not such a lawyer thing anymore. And I'm hoping, and I saw the Jeremy Corbyn youth parliamentary thing that he used to do last year, which was oversubscribed, you know, and it was great, and it was such a cross-functional members of the community, and it, you know, he got standing ovation. They were inspired by him, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm a Labour party. I am a Labour supporter. I'm not telling people that Labour's wrong and Conservative shit. I'm just saying that the people, the very people that we want to get involved in politics. It's really weird, but looking at her age and the people that are reposting her, maybe they're excited about politics. I've never seen it before, but looking at the subscription to the youth parliamentary meetings, they're oversubscribed and they're young. So, you know, I hope people aspire to think politics is not within their reach. Because, as I said, when she gets up and speaks, we all understand, well, not me, but the kids seem to understand her, you know?
you and I are too old. What's she on about, eh? No. Yeah, sorry, Jamie, go and come back on that. Yeah
I was going to say, I mean, I think this is about people being able to see someone who looks more like them, who says the kind of things that they're thinking on the TV, which I think, as we've just said earlier, is such a rare thing today. But I guess, you know, I was kind of thinking about this earlier that, you know, when we think about, you know, if you think about like an opposition in the media of there are people who want to put forward the kind of politics that we're talking about, you know, want to put forward, you know, alternative viewpoints and so on. I guess there's like a risk that we can see it as two sides fighting over who has access to the microphone in the media. But I think in a way there's a kind of bigger divide, which is a lot of mainstream media wants you to take on what they're saying and then basically do nothing about it. So become apathetic, you know, watch a TV program where, you know, working class people are put down and told they can't take part in politics, to blame migrants for problems or whatever. Whereas the kind of media that we want is one that says, actually, like, you have the power to go out there and change the world. And so, like, what we want to do with the media, it's not just about, like, a different voice. It's like it's a different project, which I think can sometimes get a little bit lost in these debates.
Yeah, I mean, that's a phenomenal point. Yeah, it's an entirely different project. You're quite right. Looking at that in a slightly wider political context, though, and this is the part that I struggle with a bit, is because I feel like someone tells me one thing and then they do another. I feel like with so many of the areas that were desecrated in this, for instance, in this country, desecrated by deindustrialization. We're not the only country, but that was what they did, you know, an active political attack. So often areas that had really, really strong working class community activity organization. I know this show has a lot of international listeners, so I'll just say this and let you look it up yourself. It's no surprise that a city like Liverpool was as targeted as it was by the conservatives and their extremism. And yet, I feel like we're the ones who are offering the opportunity to have a better chance at that, as you say, as a wider project to kind of bring back power to working class people in their lives and to do it through media, among other things. And yet, almost I'm wary of saying entire generations, that's far too simplistic. But people of an older generation, they don't seem to, they say they want this, they say they talk about how wondrous the past was. And we're giving them potential of a future, but they don't seem to want anything to do with it. Is it just they don't like us because we're, you know, London-based or what? I don't know what's the deal, man.
Well, it's interesting that I don't know who they sampled in regards to what they want out of a political party. I think it was the older people, personally. So one of the things that came out tops was security. Second was terrorism, and on par with terrorism was immigration. But I don't know who they sampled for that, really. I think if you spoke to someone a bit younger, I think they'd want more things about opportunity. But getting back to the subject is how we get those young potential voters and give them a voice in a credible medium, in regards to media or broadcast or YouTube or radio shows or podcasts. How we link that's the big thing for me anyway.
Yeah, Jamie.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where, like, you know, the question of having like a battle over the ideas about what the issues are is kind of important. Because if people are talking about security and they're talking about terrorism, like, you know, a lot of these things are the kind of red flags of mainstream media, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, really, the problem is not like a financial crisis, you know, a small number of people owning most of the wealth in the country. It's like the risk of foreigners or whatever. And so I think this is where, like, there's a kind of two-part battle for the left over the media. It's like, how do we, like, undercut some of those debates, but then to realize that, you know, we want more than just a lefty on the telly telling us that it's not migrants that are the problem.
Yeah, completely.
Because it's not hugely, you know, we also need to think about, like, how media can be empowering. So, like, how people can go away and do things about it, I guess.
Hmm. Yeah, completely. And that's, as I say, not just saying this is, I mean, this is something that certainly in my sort of younger life, my political coming of age era, was characterized by a lot of the you know, what was called anti-globalization, stuff like that, and obviously lots of anti-racism activity. But it did seem it was characterized a lot of the time by anti-activity. We weren't really progressing forward. We weren't really putting our own thing out there. And also, as sure you remember, Dave, there was times as a trade union movement, and I still think there's too many elements of this today, where we were fighting to preserve what we have to try and stop it from being taken away. We weren't fighting for anything better. We weren't fighting to push forward.
You know, it's like the, I have a great deal of respect from this, for the students from 2010 and stuff like that, and the kind of demos that they went into. But, you know, they were fighting to not be made any worse off, not basically have their education robbed from them and their future totally fucked over. They weren't, it wasn't 1968. It was a different fight. You know, neoliberalism had overrun us for the last 30 odd years. And now they were fighting to not be, you know, taken out any further. You know, so it's, you're right. We need to push this forward. We need to communicate. I mean, a question I wrote down on this was, how do we communicate class war from our perspective? And when I talk about that, it's not the, I think that firstly, this question is written by me as somebody who has absolutely no doubt that there is definitely class war going on, and it comes from above. So if anyone's listening and you kind of think, am I advocating class war? Who gives a shit if I am or not? It's already happening. You know, you're missing the point. So, you know, how do we communicate our perspective? How do we recruit? How do we get people's voice? You know, this is really what we're here for. And ultimately, as I think I said to both of you at some point in the last week, we're going to have to probably start a sodding YouTube channel now, aren't we? Because here we are throwing all these ideas around going, we need to do that, we need to do that. Great, now my ugly fucking mug's going to be on YouTube.
Well, I remember when I was growing up, every Sunday lunchtime you'd get a sort of really good sort of punk show, but Janet Street Porter was talking about more social issues as well in between. But it's interesting, it's kind of a clever ploy, and I suppose we mustn't, some would say, stop delving in the past, but we have to look back to know where we're at. And I look at 97 onwards, where we saw a political party that did some good things, but it what happened with the trade union movement, it went with it. And I think the trade union movement was a time for it to celebrate when it picked up the NHS off its knees, the schooling was seriously well funded, the minimum wage, you know, and we didn't really, as a trade union movement, get behind it, even though we supported the abolition of Clause 4, which kids probably say, what's he talking about, Clause 4? But it's all the things that were popular.
Look it up, kids.
Yeah, it was very popular in the last two. It was a policy that was very popular. I don't care what anyone says. It was a renationalisation of essential services. Was extremely popular with a lot of people across the country. But I think that was a time for us to celebrate. And I think that's, it's a difficult one. And it was a sleight of hand, really, where it quietened the unions down. New Labour did it. Gave them some things, not great things, but good things. But I think the trade union movement, when we should have said, look at us, look what we've done, I think we went and did the opposite. We ducked during the New Labour years. We ducked, obviously supported by its leadership, who never brought anyone through and pretty much ran the country between two of them. No one came through, but that's a separate issue.
Also, we were under attack from them, weren't we?
We were. And
they attacked the working class, they attacked the trade union.
And it wasn't until Gordon Brown took over, and then we realised, the clever people said, hang on a minute, it was all this right-wing mainstream media support that Tony Blair got. The minute Gordon Brown got in, he thought, oh shit, I need these people. Because he was under serious... He was made to feel like... If we thought Corbyn was treated bad. I mean, he was treated really badly by the press. And then he realised he needed our support. And I think we could have come, with the advent of fibre broadband at that time, we could have started a YouTube channel or something like that, and it would have been new, it would have been fresh, and supported Gordon Brown. But he had absolutely slated us for years, so told us to get back to work at one point, John.
He did.
Why would I support him? Why would I support him?
Well, and Iraq War and everything else, etc. So, Jamie, jump in, please.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a kind of long history of kind of, you know, problems around getting these struggles discussed in the media, or like how things kind of intervened before. I mean, it's kind of interesting, as somebody who kind of vaguely remembers Blair getting elected, but was involved in the student movement in 2010. like the shifts between those two things are so big. The kind of the Blair period to like post austerity crisis, and I think, you know, that those kind of generational shifts in how people tried to make sense of the world and figure out like what they could do about it, I think are really kind of quite important. So, you know, as a student for me in 2010, you know, I remember thinking that universities were a place where you did a little bit of studying, you went drinking, but you also went on demos. And that's kind of disappeared for many students today. You know, I kind of teach undergraduates every now and again, and one of the things that they all say is that they all work full-time jobs now. So it's very, very difficult for them to think about, you know, to have the space that some people had when they went to university of thinking about different ideas, of getting involved in campaigns and so on. And so I think, you know, when we think about what's appealing for media for young people today, it's like a very different environment to grow up in. Like remembering pre-austerity is something that, you know, people don't even remember the Iraq War, which was so formative for lots of people, or the anti-globalization movement or so on. Is like a lot of the reference points have changed, which I think is worth kind of thinking about in various ways.
Yeah, it's extremely important to understand those differences, and also, I mean, I'm very, and we talk about this a lot on the show, I am a extreme anti-nostalgist. I can't stand looking to the past. I hate people's concepts of everything was better in the old days, blah blah blah, it's all bollocks. But as Dave's pointed out, it's very important to remember what you can actually learn from previous times. So the point is, if you pick it up and take it forward, you know, that's more certainly more productive. And the position of many students, I think you've pointed out there very well, is extremely important. It's probably worse off than it was even in our day. And yeah, as Dave's pointed out, I think that the way that we were, you know, the word class were treated by Labour as if we, New Labour, sorry, as if we were something to be overcome. We basically got shut out of the world of aspirations. It's one of the many things I hate about the 80s and I hate about Thatcher, is that the idea of aspiration became about this, you know, if you're on a bus when you're 25, you're a loser, make shitloads of money doing a totally parasitic job, and all you aspire to is money and possessions, not that you aspire to, you know, build your community, or you aspire to do something that might be extremely artistically satisfying if they don't get paid for it. You know, that sort of stuff is very anti that sort of thing. But bringing this back to sort of our main point of what we're talking about tonight, of course, is the media. I think it's looking at how all of this kind of thing is played out in that realm. And this brings me to something I want to talk about a little bit, which is fake culture war. Again, if you're a regular listener, this is not something you're unfamiliar with me talking about. At the moment, we're having a lot more of this total crap about supposed free speech. I'm not going to go off on one on this one, because I can do that on any show, and it's not often that we get guests, so I will open this up. But I did want to ask you, James, specifically about Oxford, because I know you were there. Sorry, remind me, do you teach there now as well?
No, I worked there before the Open University, so I worked there for like a year and a half doing research, and it was an odd experience in lots of ways.
I can imagine. So I've always had a great deal of resentment towards the Oxford Debating Union, and one of the reasons being because I think they have a bunch of posh boys who try and find really vile, offensive, obnoxious, terribly awful people, all of whom are on the right, never anywhere else, and invite them to their stages under the guise of free speech, basically just in order to cause some shit, because to them politics is nothing but a parlor game. Whatever changes, they still have power because the system never changes. Is there any part of me, my view there, that is right, or am I just being an obnoxious bastard?
So I definitely think that's right. I mean, I never went to the Oxford Debating club when I worked there, but I have actually been outside it once. And the reason is for exactly what you say. When I was a student, they had Nick Griffin. They invited Nick Griffin to the Bay.
I remember that, the yeah.
National Party. And I think if memory serves, some of us got inside and shut the meeting down. And there was a kind of total outrage of like, how dare people who weren't even students at Oxford tell us who we can and can't have on the stage. And that is a kind of long tradition at Oxford of like the politics as parlor game of like, let's bring in people and debate them in the marketplace of ideas or some other kind of nonsense thing. But, you know, I think what's interesting about Oxford is you really see how, you know, there are still some universities that are, you know, that are just a training ground for the ruling class. You know, and I've taught at LSE, which is very similar. I mean, it's much more like the international ruling class, places like LSE. But like, there's a kind of outrage at the moment from some right-wing commentators about, you know, universities being a breeding ground for left-wing politics and so on, which I think shows that, you know, we might not want fascists to speak, but if the right get challenged around ideas in universities, they kind of run in terror. You know, there's recently some students have set up a report your left wing lecturer.
Turning point or toilet paper as there's a known. We won't fuck them. Yeah, carry on.
You know, there's this idea that, you know, that they can shut down the left on campus by having us reported for, you know, hate speech when we say like maybe the small number of people in society shouldn't own everything, whatever. But I think what it shows is that a lot of those people are just not, like, they don't want to debate the left.
No.
So for all this idea of, you know, they're prepared to invite fascists on to talk to them and so on, when it comes to, like, an actual battle of ideas, it's something they're like, not ready for and don't want to engage with, the more reason to fight them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're totally scared of this. They don't fight on any kind of level playing field. And also, it must be said, and again, this comes back to what we're talking about tonight, about better representation for working class people in the media. These people have the arrogance of the ruling class. They know they have every rhyme and reason to be there, and you don't. It doesn't matter what you or I think about this, and doesn't matter what the truth about this is. Their attitude is one of, you know, we are the rulers here, and it doesn't, you know, that's the level at which we will debate, as it were, with you at all. They're completely and totally scared shitless of our views, and because they know they can't win. And if you want, one good example is that they thought, you know, all forms of socialism and that kind of argument should have been killed in 1989, but it didn't. You know, we're still here. They have no idea. They can't explain how that is. Couple that with markets failing, and I mean, sorry, when you said the marketplace of ideas, I go, oh, I nearly fucking shot myself when you said that. But yeah, you're right. It's such a horrible term,
isn't it?
I think I'll have this idea today. Oh no, I don't have enough money. Can I borrow some?
It also shows that, like, you know, if you were like a right wing intellectual, like, your ideas have been proven wrong. You know,
yeah.
Like, how do you explain the financial crisis? Like, how do you explain what's happening now? Is, you know, it's not like they have, you know, their stall in the marketplace of ideas looks pretty shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just let's just continue exactly how we're going and not try and make sense of, you know, the fact we're destroying the planet. You know, there isn't a kind of strong or like developed intellectual current on the right, which means, you know, if it were, you know, if the media or if universities or any other place were an even playing field, we'd be able to do quite well. And it comes back to that problem of, you know, the media is rigged against having those arguments happening, at least the mainstream media. So it's how do we then think about how we take that fight on in various ways?
Yeah, completely. And I think, I mean, my attitude, and sorry, Dave, I'll bring you back in on this one in a sec. But it's my attitude, maybe for somebody my age group or whatever, or perhaps even with my position of privilege, is to, you know, I see people like Piers Morgan, I just think, oh, fuck that twat, and ignore him.
you know, when he's when rather than actually talking about the important sort of issues that we're talking about tonight, they're having screaming fits over whether vegan sausage rolls should exist or whatever else. And not to mention a hideous amount of transphobia that you also get from programs like that, which is very, very mainstream, which is very, very dangerous. But, you know, this is what I mean. I think I'm probably wrong in trying to ignore this, and maybe we should do something more active about it. But again, you know, the position is, that we have here is it all comes down to power. And they have, the media at the moment, have the ability to set the agenda so that we are having these conversations, so that you do have situations. I mean, funny enough, someone asked me this in a union meeting the other day. They said, how do we get our perspective? Because we're about to have a ballot where we are. And the ballot is in process right now. It's almost certainly going to return quite a high threshold for one side. And they're saying, but we always get misrepresented in the media. So the first point I said to this person is, stop buying those shitty newspapers that I see you buying all the time, because they hate us. And secondly, what is my active... So again, that's something I can say to you to stop doing. What is my active point to say to someone, you know, this is where we should go, outside of some of what we've talked about tonight, which is, you know, start your own media wherever possible. Now, I'll keep saying that over and over again. I don't mind. But is that message getting through? Sorry, Dave, I haven't come back to you for a minute. Please jump in.
Yeah, it's as I said last week, there's so much stuff that kids need to know. And it's frightening, actually, if you put it in front of them, and if they use an analogy as, why can't I get work? Why do I have, I'm saddled with debt when I join or leave a seat of education? How do I buy a property? It's how we...
How do I live?
Why do my friend or members of my family have to use a food bank? And it's about having someone there for them to talk to about it. And people of the movement, people of the... And there are people of the movement. It's not an old school thing. Look at the young people wanting to vote. The last two general elections, so there's many, many more of those people. The trouble is that the media, the mainstream media, have got hold of a certain age group or certain communities within England who, I think, Ian Lavery, fantastic politician, man, I think he speaks the language that those people want to hear. But he said he represents a community that couldn't spell multiculturalism if it slapped them in the face. It just wouldn't happen in his community. But it's important that those young people in those communities, young people I'm talking about, we're never going to get... You're never going to educate me, for example, on right-wing media or conservatism or anti-trade union. You're never going to change me. You're never going to make me a manager. Because I'm too old. But when you're young and you're asking these questions and you take people through history and say, look at that. And it's something that, a course that I did, Jamie, in that I would ask young people, what's happened to you? And they would name something, and then I would put a timeline on the wall from the 60s and how that led to their problem. So I think someone mentioned to me about jobs, so I put timelines about the Bryant and May dispute in 1850, or it was jobs and women, it was something like that, and 1970, the Dartford dispute, and women allowed to vote from 1970, and it kind of created a really real-life timeline to his problem. But I had to do it not sarcastically, or just show him that this is what it led to. I was hoping for something a lot more complex, like someone from Liverpool saying, well, I'm all piss poor, and that would be fantastic. That would take up the whole wall. But this particular issue, I did a sort of picture timeline of women and voting, and they were like, oh, what? I didn't know that. I genuinely didn't know. How it started off, how it ended off the timeline was 1969 and the landing on the moon, which was achievable. So I said, well, he said, why did you put landing on the moon? I said, that became before women could vote. It was in, oh, right, okay. But that's one exercise I would use, but it's how we engage them. You know, it's really weird, but.
Yeah, go on, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that's the kind of history that people should get the chance to learn. But instead, we learn about, you know, we just learn about the landing on the moon, or we just learn about kings and queens and, you know, history of the elite and so on. Mm. And I think, you know, this is one of the problems of, you know, the mainstream not having left-wing people in positions of power in media and able to say things also then has that effect on, like, forgetting working class history. You know, I mean, I used to live around the corner from the Bryant and May factory, and, you know, most people know it now as, like, bougie flats in Bow, you know, that at one point had the missiles on top of for the Olympics. But, you know, its history as, like, a site of struggle for most people is lost. And so I think even, like, the most basic thing of telling history is like, a huge political act. Like, as you say, putting it up on the board for people.
Yeah, if I remember rightly, I read somewhere that they do have a plaque up about the strike, the Match Girl strike. But because it's a private residence, you can't see it unless they give you permission to go in. I don't know if that's correct. But
I think there's one just outside the gate, because I've done
like a
history walking tour around there. And you can kind of, because there's a whole load of places, you know, within a short walk in the East End. But again, with those plaques, if you don't know they're there, they're really easy to miss, eh?
Well, they are.
It's interesting because I talk about the young. I think we reach, and it's great, really, certainly in the UK, when we look at grime and trap, a lot of their videos are based, and I was really proud, actually, because it's an artist that does his videos where I grew up, Church Road. Not very glamorous. But as I mentioned, the 90s, and John's not a big fan of the 90s, but when we talk about rap music in the 90s, it was all about Cristal, champagne, big cars, lots of money, mansions, you know, and it's the wrong message. It's certainly different for me as a rap fan to what Public Enemy were talking about, which was the 80s.
Me too.
And then we look at NWA in the late 80s, early 90s. But it's really good in one sense. Netflix, I mentioned that medium. In that, how they talk about, and Snowfall, which is a BBC Two series, three seasons, where it talks about the growth of the CIA deliberately pumping drugs into certain ethnic minorities areas of America, i.e. South Central LA, deliberately so. And people are seeing that now, that age group, they're seeing that deliberate ploy. You know, you look at MTV at that time, which was owned by Viacom, huge, I think it's CNN and all that, isn't it? Huge amounts of money. And just telling these young kids, you know, be a rapper and be a mega star and own lots of cars and, you know, and it just sent a message. And I think the UK just dismissed that. And the grime and trap we're seeing now, they're doing their videos where they live, which is inner city poverty. It's very dark and stuff, but
yeah.
You know, I don't think the US love those videos, but in the UK, they're certainly very welcome.
Well, speaking of that, just quickly, Dave, because you know I'm a fan of Hip Hop Evolution, but I'm assuming they're going to be more serious, because there's so much stuff they haven't covered, not only in America, but also outside of America. It's got to the point now, there's four series in. I think it's about time you started branching out, and British hip hop has definitely got to be on that agenda, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, but you've got to remember that Hip Hop Evolution, which is it's probably the best hip hop documentary I've ever seen. And why I mention hip hop, Jamie, because it is a narrative on poverty or inner city. It is. That's what it is.
It's important for viewers, especially younger viewers, understand how to read it like that.
It is. So they will.
The art of nothing, as Ice-T's documentary, Something Out of Nothing, you know, the art of rap music.
Well, most...
We had nothing.
If you ask any kid about old school hip-hop, they'll all know the message. And the message was exactly that. That was Reaganomics. But as I said, the UK, in some sense, and we have to take this as positive, the UK and the youth of UK in that grime and trap scene will not do glamorous videos. They'll do a video on their doorstep, Tottenham, West Bromwich, Birmingham, London, I said Tottenham, Church Road, which is where I grew up. I couldn't believe it. I saw a video the other day, and it was just, this guy was just rapping outside his barbershop, and I grew up right there. And that, and the poverty there is terrible, and the amount of drugs that they're selling there. But he said, let's do a video right here, right where I live.
Yeah, I mean, this, Jamie, you're going to have to help us here, because if me and Dave go down a rabbit hole of hip-hop, this whole show is lost. So,
I'm tempted for that to happen, because, you know, I think there's a huge amount that could be said. But I think in terms of thinking about communication, I think you're completely right about, you know, about hip-hop, about rap, about grime, like, as a narrative of, like, people's lived experience. I think the left can learn a lot from what people are able to do with, you know, a laptop in a bedroom, a smartphone outside the barbershop, like being able to tell those stories and share those stories. I think there's a lot that can be learned from that. Is that doesn't require like a CNN TV studio or like, you know, top of the range, like online streaming equipment. It's like, if you want to get a story out there, like, people are able to do that all over the country with little resource. Is, you know, that in a sense is like the history of grime in the UK, of like people getting access to the tools to make music in a way that like massively democratizes people having their voice out there. And, you know, you can imagine in generations before, like being able to think that you could have your voice out, you know, to that many people that quickly at that lower cost, it would be kind of, it would feel revolutionary.
Yeah, I think, and we've got to take a
this for granted.
We've got to take a positive from that, because what these guys did over the last 10 years is they broke the music industry, the traditional music industry. They said, I don't need a contract with you, Mr. Warner Brothers or Mr. Sony. They said, I'm going to go on YouTube and create my own channel. I mean, Ed Sheeran did it. You know, Stormzy did it. Oh, so many artists that said, well, we're going to do our own thing, create our own channel. And they just totally bypassed the traditional music industry. And we can do that with the media, I think. But it has to be with their help, because they've got the energy. They've got the energy. They've got, they'll see things that we don't. And as I said, sometimes we use words and narrative, which me, you and Jamie will totally understand. Sometimes when you hear their lyrics, it's the same thing, but in a different way.
Yeah, completely. And also, I mean, I think that's a very good example. Dare I use this term? It seems a bit of a buzz one, but they have effectively seized their own means of production here. Am I right about that, Jamie, or am I not factually quite accurate there?
No, I mean, I think, you know, I think that's kind of what I was trying to say earlier is, you know, previously, like, they would have had to go to a label. They would have had to sign a really bad deal that means someone else is going to make a lot of money off them. And instead, people are finding a way to do it for themselves. But I think it comes back a little bit to what we discussed in the previous show of, like, it's politics, but it speaks to and from people's lived experience. So it's not a kind of abstract thing about, you know, the difficulties of poverty today, but it's people who are angry about their lived experience talking to other people who can relate to that. And I think, you know, I'm always surprised when people, you know, people who don't think what's happening in with that kind of music is exciting. It's like, it's a generation finding a way to speak about their conditions or like in particular areas or whatever. And we should take it seriously. But the difficulty is, like, how do you bridge the gaps between people who are finding ways to say to talk about their experience in one way and, like, bridge it into, like, other kinds of politics, which I think, I don't know, I think it was you, John, talking about Grime for Corbyn last week and thinking about, like, that's such a shift change in like the connection to like mainstream left-wing politics and culture and art in various ways that I don't think we've seen something comparable in a very, very long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, this is it's one that Dave talks about a lot, actually. It's such, we haven't seen something that overt, have we? It just basically says, I am on this side, you know, which is quite something. It's, I mean, it says, again, coming back, I know Dave referenced the 90s, I mean, and my well-known distaste for it, mainly because I grew up then. But it was like, it was so much of the culture had been neutered by then. I mean, coming back for earlier on, you mentioned, again, I don't like to talk about the past, but you mentioned in Channel 4, you know, Norman Tebbit used to complain about Channel 4's content. You know, they used to try and censor a lot of it. It used to have this thing. I remember reading an article by Mark Fisher, and he talked about staying up late because there was a documentary with Jacques Derrida on it, you know, and where else were you going to see this? You know, that's, it's like that. They used to show you stuff you didn't see anywhere else, you know, and it wasn't. And again, I know we have the better access to media with looking, you know, YouTube or whatever, but you got to know what you're looking for, haven't you? You know, so yeah, it's very important on that front.
Well, and those people aren't just going to stumble across the left, are they?
No, it was most certainly not unless we change it. So anyway, I think in answering, I did have one more question, but I think we've actually answered it between us quite well, which is organisation. Do we do it from a traditional perspective? Does it grow more organically? Well, I think the example of Grime is a very much an organic growth of a different kind of way of taking that kind of control. And the fact that many of them happen to have, with the Grime for Corbyn, happen to have chosen a more left-wing position from their own perspective. And all of that being completely from life experience. That's what I find most interesting. It's not, you know, the likes of me sitting in a room full of books going through theories. You know, this is their real life. And I really admire and respect that. Is there anything you want to add on the main issue for tonight? Because I want to talk to you, Jamie, very quickly about your strike action. So, Dave, you got anything to add on near the end? Or?
No, as I said last week, we just got to rethink. We've got plenty of time to do it, and it's time to rethink our strategy. And let's not go through the traditional means of talking to each other. It's talking about talking to new people. And if I could get a wrap up, so what we do on Tracks FM to promote ourselves rather than take advertising, we invite new artists to come on and we'll promote their music for free. And that's the way I'm trying to work this medium out, to get more listeners and new listeners and listen to shows like this perhaps. And I think we should be looking outward rather than inward.
Jamie, do you want to sum up anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is that kind of issue of what we want to do with the media is different. Mm. You know, we need to find ways to use media to empower people and to tell people, you know, whether it's looking back at history like we talked earlier, or like telling those other stories or those, you know, successes of things happening today, is like our media is not to have like a left-wing celebrity or to just have a better set of shows on the TV. Yeah. Is to have it as a way to getting people involved in changing their own and other people's conditions. So like we kind of can't lose sight of that bigger question when we talk about the media. Is that how does it help us do things in the world? I think is the key point for me.
Oh yeah, no, brilliant point there. And yeah, our story is about everybody, not just celebrities. You know, I think that's fair. And I don't actually do the kind of celebrity bashing. If you've achieved something and that's the realm that you're in, fine. You know, it's and I don't think everyone should not have views and opinions in that factor, even if their views and opinions I don't agree with. I don't think people like that should be invited on Question Time. But that's a different issue. Let's not go down that particular rabbit hole. Okay. So just before we go this week, just quickly, I want to say to people, if you're interested in cultural analysis, particularly from a more Marxist perspective, in the hopefully near future, there may be a podcast for you. Stay tuned. We'll tell you about it some other time. Jamie, please update us quickly before we go on your strike action. What's going on where you are?
So we're now entering into the fourth week of strike action in universities. So it's 14 days in total, but most universities are now gearing up for 5 days straight this week. Although confusingly, my university has already done its 5 days, so I've only got a couple left this week. But it's, you know, it's another period of really long strike action, where people have been out on the pickets, you know, every day for you know, a whole chunk of time now, for bits of weeks and so on. And I was thinking about this in terms of communication, because we've had a series of debates on the picket lines about the leadership of our union and about what negotiation means. And, you know, it's been quite a difficult strike in lots of ways, because the issues are big national issues. It's about pay, it's about pensions. And pensions are a really challenging thing to have like a clear argument about, because, you know, one of the big fights is about how much money is in the pension scheme. And a big pension scheme doesn't have like a set of accounts you can just pull off the total at the bottom. It's like a social construction of different investments and portfolios and so on. So one of the challenges that we're having is our negotiators have said that they feel like there's an offer, you know, they think things might be happening, but they won't tell us the details of them. And we've had a lot of debates on the picket line about whether negotiations should be confidential or not. And what we've argued, we run a bulletin called the University Worker, is that there should never be anything privately debated in negotiations. Like, we should all know what's happening. But we don't know what's happening. And so we think that if you don't know what's happening, it's probably not good. And so I think this is where, like, communication, it's not just the fact that the union leadership and the negotiators aren't telling us what's happening. It's that they don't want to hear our views on it. And it's because, you know, most of our membership only want to go on strike to win something big. And we're worried about whether or not, you know, the union's going to follow through on that. So, you know, it's been a kind of hugely inspiring strike. Like, strike action is always like a really positive experience for people to go through. But we're still trying to figure out what the outcome of the strike's going to be. So, yeah, we'll hopefully know more by the end of the week.
Yeah. Also, in solidarity, there's been some student occupations too, I thought, for some of the sites.
There's a few that have started. So I think it's UCL and the University of Arts London. So, you know, the student movement is in a different place to where it was a few years ago. But, you know, for us, it's hugely empowering to have students taking an interest in the working conditions of people that teach them and, you know, putting themselves out there and taking action. So that's really kind of strengthened things in the last week. You know, it's not just us alone on the picket lines. You know, there are students trying to do things to help us too.
Yeah. Well, we'll be on those picket lines with you, certainly in spirit, hopefully in practice. Thanks again, Jamie, for your time this week. And thank you, Dave. I really appreciate it for the show. I just want to say my last bit in closing is to people out there. We've been inspiring you to, or hopefully inspiring you to do your own media, take part in the world, to be seen. I would say, please let you be the ones that start a YouTube channel so I don't have to. Please, God, don't make me have to. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.
All the Rage with John Bowd. www.trexfm.org